This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
A fourth person has died in hospital after a group of family members were pulled from the surf at an unpatrolled beach near a popular Victorian holiday spot near Phillip Island yesterday in what is the worst Victorian drowning event in almost 20 years. And it's a sad but sobering reminder that with millions of us flocking to the beaches this summer, we need to be so careful about where we choose to swim. And whilst we're advised to swim between the flags, many of us choose not to or go to beaches where there aren't any flags. So what can we do to reduce the risk of drowning? Professor Rob Brander is from the University of New South Wales Beach Safety Research Group and joins us on the line. Rob, welcome to Joy Drive.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Drowning such as this tragedy seems to be a given part of the Australian summer, doesn't it? Are we seeing an increase in the number of drownings?
I think, well, last year was particularly bad, last summer, and we didn't think it would get much worse, but I think the numbers are on track to be higher for this summer. And it's terrible because, you know, you sort of say it's an accepted part of the summer, but it shouldn't be an accepted part of the summer. I mean, we have a drowning problem on our hands, and it's not getting any better. So we need to do something better to try and solve this.
Are most of these drownings preventable?
Well, theoretically, every drowning is preventable because if you don't get in that situation in a water body where you're sort of in trouble or you're out of your conditions, then yes, every drowning is potentially preventable. So, you know, you have to make decisions when you go swimming anywhere. You have to think about your swimming ability. You have to think about the conditions. You have to think about all sorts of safety factors. You make this decision to go swimming, right? So ultimately, it comes back to personal decisions.
Now, when, let's say we do make that decision to go swimming, and obviously the best possible way to do that is to go to a beach that is patrolled and to swim between the flags. But let's say we do end up at a beach that isn't patrolled. What are we doing wrong? What is it that we're doing wrong there that is causing a lot of these drownings?
Well, I think, if you go to a surf beach, any surf beach in Australia, they're going to have offshore flowing rip currents, which are very strong, narrow offshore flows. And a lot of Australians don't know how to spot a rip. And a lot of people don't actually know what a rip is. And you can, you know, you might not be a good swimmer. And if you lose your footing, you're going to go offshore in rip currents. So rip currents are absolutely the number one coastal hazard on surf beaches. But also people, if they're poor swimmers, they just get out of their depth. But I think it's not reading the conditions. So Surf Life Saving Australia, the national body, has a campaign that hasn't really got as much attention as it should. But it's this, they call it the think line. And it's this idea that any beach you go to, whether it's patrolled or not, you draw an imaginary line in the sand and you stop and you spend a few minutes thinking about beach safety. You don't just rush in the water and you think, are there lifeguards further down the beach? Maybe I should go there. Are the waves too big for me? Do I have mobile phone reception? Do I know what a rip is? All these things, because I think in most cases, especially during the holidays, people are just at beaches to have fun. And you're not necessarily thinking about safety, and you're certainly not thinking that a fun day at the beach is going to end up in tragedy. So you just always have to think about beach safety. And my mantra is that you don't cross the road without looking both ways, and you should never go to any beach without spending a few minutes thinking about safety.
That's a really good point, Rob, because just thinking about it, I mean, you go to the beach, you drop your things, and you just run into the water straight away, don't you, without even thinking about it. So draw a line, think about it, read the beach. How can we read if there is a rip? Are they easy to see?
No, I mean, they're easy for me to see because I've spent 30 years looking for them, and I learned quickly how to spot a rip because I was going in the water surfing and body surfing. But, you know, and I've spent the last 20 years trying to teach people how to spot rips, but it's not easy. You have to go to the beach a lot. You have to see the rips. You have to have somebody point them out to you. You have to understand what they are and what the visual clues are. But basically, the most common type of rip current sits in a deep channel between shallow sandbars. And because it's deeper, that water looks darker and there's less waves breaking. So if you're scanning up and down a surf beach, you see a lot of white water, and then you see these narrow, dark green gaps like paths going out through the surf, and they might be 5, 10, 20 meters wide. Chances are that's your rip current. They look like these dark lines, dark green lines going out through the surf. And that's one way to spot them. The other way is that rips are taking water offshore, waves are bringing it back in. So there's this coming together of the water, which makes the surface texture look different. It's bumpy, it's ripply, and often there's clouds of sand spinning at the back. But the best way to spot a rip is to get a bit of elevation. So if you're at a headland or a top of a sand dune or back of the beach looking down, you're looking for these dark gaps. But you need to spend time, right? You need to spend minutes.
And I imagine that because it's a lot of people think because it's calmer, it might be a safer place to swim, but it's not. That may not be the case. It could be the worst place to swim.
Well, that's actually one of the danger, you know, the risks of rips is often they look like the safest place to swim because a lot of people don't like breaking waves. And wherever you see white water, that looks pretty messy. But actually, the white water is shallow, and that water is coming to the beach. So, yeah, they pick the seemingly clear and calm areas to swim, and often those are rips.
We're chatting with Professor Rob Brander from the University of New South Wales Beach Safety Research Group. Now, Rob, what equipment should we take with us to the beach? Apart from our picnic stuff and what have you, is there anything we should take in case, you know, we do observe someone in trouble?
Yeah, good point. That's a really good point. You know, some people just go to the beach with their towel and that's it. But if you are going with a family or with a group, bring something that floats. And this is a good habit to get into. When you go to a beach, whether it's patrolled or not, you know, just look up and down the beach and is there somebody that's got a boogie board or an esky, something that floats? Because if somebody in your group, even if it's your own child, gets into trouble, you know, you want to resist the temptation to run in the water as fast as possible and then swim to them because you're already panicking and you're exhausted. And it's not uncommon for that bystander rescuer to drown. But if you take some time and get somebody to get some help, find something on the beach that floats. If you're going to go in, bring something that floats. And we did a study, looked at the bystander drownings over the last 15 years in Australia, 65 of them. I think not one of them brought a flotation device. So bring something that floats. Bring a boogie board, bring a pool noodle, something. You know, it's a little tip that might just save you. And because floating means everything, right? Having something to hold on to is the difference in life and death for somebody who's in trouble in the water.
And what if you do find that you are caught in a bit of a rip? What's the best thing to do?
Best thing to do, pretty much the industry advice now is just to float, stay afloat. You know, you're conserving energy by floating. Maybe you're treading water lying on your back, but just kind of relax. And if you're in a rip current, it's just taking you for a ride. And if you're floating, the second most important thing to do is to signal for help. So that's arm up, waving, whatever. If there's lifeguards or lifesavers around, they'll come and get you. But also, you know, surfers do a lot of rescues and they have a nice board. You've got to get their attention. So you need to call out. But floating's the best. I mean, nothing's perfect. Floating isn't perfect. You might end up having to float for a long time. But swimming parallel is old advice. That's the traditional advice to get out of rip, swim parallel. I think it's kind of dangerous because not everybody can swim and not all rips go straight. And we've measured this and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So in my opinion, floating is the best.
Rob, really important conversation. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us on Drive today.
Yeah. Thanks for talking to me.
That's Professor Rob Brander from the University of New South Wales Safety Research Group. There you go. Just because the water might seem a bit calmer in one spot doesn't mean it's safer.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app, no matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.